If SAG members can start taking their seats, we're ready to start the next session. Thank you.
Well, thanks, everyone, for being prompt in the relatively short break as we're trying to accomplish a lot today. Board Member Charlie Niemeyer will make some comments to introduce our next subject, which is a discussion of the FASB IASB projects and the potential impact on auditors. But before I turn it to Charlie, I'd like to welcome FASB Board Member Larry Smith and thank Larry for coming to join us for this presentation, as well as SAG members Jamie Miller and Mike Gallagher, who will participate in the panel and make comments from a preparer's and an auditor's point of view with respect to the change that's going on. Charlie, thank you.
Thanks, Marty. I don't think this needs much of a setup. Certainly, it's well understood that FASB and IASB have been working toward convergence for some time. For a number of reasons, a deadline of 2011 was established. Certainly, as time moved forward, the more difficult standards was taking longer, and there was a large amount that needed to be done a short amount of time in order to meet the 2011 deadline. But certainly dedicated to the convergence effort and bolstered by the G20, both FASB and IASB committed to redouble their efforts to meet those deadlines. And recently, some questions have been raised about the aggressiveness of that schedule and the reasonableness of being able to for companies to be able to absorb the speed by which those standards would be put into the system. We are very fortunate to have three people who are very knowledgeable to lead the discussion. We'll start with Larry.
Thanks, Charlie. About 2 months ago, Marty called me up and said, gee, I think we ought to have a discussion about the audit implications of the tsunami of accounting standards that's about to hit the world. And for some reason, I agreed to participate, so here I am. I would like to reemphasize some of the remarks that Marty made earlier, and that is, this is a discussion about the audit implications of the accounting standards, not about the accounting standards themselves. So those of you that packed your briefcases full of ripe tomatoes, should put them back. I need to give the typical disclaimer. These are my views, only my views. I probably don't need to give that disclaimer since fellow board member Tom Linsmeyer is here, and I'm sure Tom will not be reluctant to correct me when I say something that he doesn't agree with.
That never happens.
Yeah, right. I'm going to go through these slides. I'm going to assume that most of you have been through them already because the slides were prepared at about a 20,000-foot level. I'm going to talk to them at probably a 50,000-foot level because I don't have enough time to get through them, but I am going to focus on a couple of things. The first one is just in terms of, some people might question what is it that's driving the FASB in terms of setting its priorities. And we've had discussions about this internally for quite some time, and all board members agree, as well as our trustees have agreed and have said publicly, that the prioritization of our work should come as follows, and that is, first of all, to maintain independence over what our process is, over our due process. The second is that we should have in mind an improvement in financial reporting in the United States. And the third is to converge with IFRS. And those are the principles that we stand by in terms of directing our behavior. And I think, you all should be aware of that. I'm not going to go through this slide in detail other than a lot of people ask, gee, would your agenda be significantly different if you were not on the way to towards convergence, and I think most board members would agree that it would. Perhaps, you know, the degree of effort at any particular time might vary from board member to board member, but I think our agenda would look pretty similar to the agenda that we have right now. This thing isn't working. Okay. In terms of drivers of the timing, I think most of you understand, you know, the financial crisis has obviously influenced the speed with which we're addressing issues. G20 has asked for us and the ISB to redouble our efforts. Well, in fact, I would say that we've at least quadrupled our efforts. The SEC monitoring process in terms of they ultimately coming to a decision regarding adoption of IFRS in the U.S., they will be taking a look at the amount of progress that we've made collectively on the various MOU projects. The June 2011 date that many people have referred to is there for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is some of the countries that have announced plans to switch to IFRS in either 2011 or 2012, as well as the IASB's desire to have a stable platform for a number of years while people adopt. And there are a number of board members, original board members, that will be turning over, including the chairman, Sir David, in 2011. One of our major concerns has been really the ability of you all, the constituents that provide us input, which is essential to coming up with appropriate standards, your ability to digest everything that we put out. We've had a number of letters recently from the CFA, the FEI, ITEC, as well as firms, et cetera, that have said, look, it will be impossible for us to comment on these. We've had a number of large international companies tell us that while they typically respond to everything that we issue, they will not have time to respond to everything. So they've asked us to reconsider it, slow down, et cetera. And in June, the IASB and the FASB met, discussed this, and came up with a staggering of our projects in order to provide people with more time. Now, is that enough time for everybody? You know, we're not so sure. You know, we're aware of some recent communications that have indicated that, gee, you know, we appreciate what you did, but you didn't do enough, so how about doing some more in terms of slowing down and staggering? And, you know, we will do our best in order to try to comply with requests. But at the same time, you have to understand that when you're working with international organizations that are putting pressure on you to get things done by a particular point in time, there's a degree of negotiation that goes into what your final consideration of timing is. So we're working with that delicately, but I can tell you that from our standpoint, we will not come up with a final, and I think I speak for the entire board. If Tom wants to correct me, he can, but I don't think he will, that we will not issue a final standard on something if we don't think that we've adequately heard from constituents and considered constituent comments on proposed standards. I think we are very sensitive to what your views are, and we will consider them as best we can, but we will not issue a standard if we think that there has been inadequate due process. Again, I'll go back to that slide that I presented. You know, independent due process is at the top of our priority. You know, next is improvement in financial reporting for the U.S., and then finally convergence. So that's where our priorities are, and I think we will behave that way. In terms of the June 2nd statement, which was supplemented in detail later on in the month, the SEC specifically came out and said that this staggering of standards will not impact their ability to make a decision in 2011 about moving to IFRS. And that was a very major concern, particularly on the part of the IASB, when we started talking to them about staging our various projects. I'm not going to go into detail on this. There are a couple points I'd like to make. First of all, it says insurance summer 2010. That summer 2010 is definitely a target of the IASB. In terms of the FASB, we have yet to determine whether we're going to issue a document or in what form a document, if we do issue one, it will be. So don't take insurance to the bank yet. I put a question mark under early 2011 for financial instruments with characteristics of equity just because of a couple of factors. First of all, the project manager dealing with it is going to be going out on maternity leave fairly soon. And secondly, it's just a very complex area. We issued a what we call a fatal flaw draft to various people when we were thinking of issuing an exposure draft. Let's put it this way. That fatal flaw draft fell flat on its face. Okay, we got a significant number of very, very critical comments such that we decided not to issue the exposure draft. And, in fact, we're in the midst of trying to reconsider exactly how to approach this topic, whether we do it strategically through a what's called a surgical fix of what we have now in GAAP, which could be difficult and might not improve things dramatically, or whether we go back to the drawing board and start over again. So I wouldn't hang my hat on early 2011 for an exposure draft there. Caution about the timing. Probably the biggest point here is that while we've said we're going to issue no more than four major exposure drafts in any particular quarter, you know, historically we've never issued more than four in a year, and the IASB in its nine-year history has only issued nine major standards. So to say that we have a challenge in front of us is understating the case. The one point on this slide, it says that we don't agree on particular issues, and the second one where it says leases in terms of lessor accounting, that can now be eliminated because we, since preparing these slides, we have agreed on lessor accounting. But it will come up later on in terms of challenges for you all. I'll skip over this and now get into the details. Financial instruments, I think it's fairly obvious to all of us that financial instruments is probably one of the most important projects on our agenda, and this was just reiterated by the financial crisis. You know, obviously we have complexities and inconsistencies within U.S. GAAP as well as IFRS, you know, not the least of which is different impairment approaches just for different types of financial instruments as well as different impairment approaches between us and potentially what the IFRS, what the IASB is recommending. And finally, some people have advised us that we shouldn't say this, but I'll say it. Fair value to some of us is almost like a religious war out there, and we are trying to deal with that as best we can. What we've done is our exposure draft really proposes to maximize information to investors so that there's both those that are in the fair value camp have that information and can use it to the extent they want and need to. Those that don't agree or are not in the fair value camp have information relative to how a company runs its business, et cetera. So there's both fair value information as well as amortized cost information. I think we've issued our exposure draft. Those of you that follow the standard or the standard setting process know that it was a close vote in terms of what we exposed. It was a 3-2 vote. And in fact, we have both camps represented right now at this table. You know, I would not consider myself to be a fair value zealot, if you will. But yet I was going along with some of the decisions, because in standard setting you do compromises, okay, in order to come up with maximizing what you think to be information, improving information to investors. And I was going along just fine until we got to deposits. And we're not suggesting, or we're not proposing, that deposits be carried at fair value, but rather something close to fair value. It's a current value notion. And that's what kind of threw me over the edge. People have decided to go along with that for different reasons, but I think this proposed solution will be a challenge to you auditors, and we'll get into that in more detail. Probably the most important thing that isn't mentioned on this slide is that in terms of our simplified criteria for hedge accounting, we've simplified it to use a reasonably effective criteria, which is different than the high hurdle that you have now in order to reach hedge accounting, but that will obviously have some audit implications. We have major challenges to convergence in financial instruments because, as most of you know, the IASB implemented or approved IFRS number 9, which is very different from what we've proposed. They have an amortized cost bucket for a number of their financial instruments, and we are going to have challenges in front of us in terms of seeing if both boards can come together. I'll skip through these. Okay, fair value measurement, just to make you aware of the fact, there is a fair value proposal out there to change 107, or what was 107 now is topic 820, I think, if my memory serves me correctly. There are not very major changes, but when you look at our proposal, it's going to frighten you because there are changes all over the place. And that was primarily in order to conform the words of our standard to what the IASB is finalizing. But there aren't substantive changes in terms of a lot of those words. Probably the most substantive changes are that we've eliminated the highest and best use concept for financial instruments. We've clarified that a blockage factor should only be used for level one or level one measurements. We've put in an exception for fair value of financial instruments that are managed as a portfolio so that you can fair value them as a portfolio. From a practical standpoint, that's not a change because that's how financial institutions were doing it to begin with. And we've implemented sensitivity disclosures, which probably is one of the most major changes of that standard. Single statement of comprehensive income is just saying that you present your income statement, below it you put your changes in comprehensive income, and that all has to be together. You can no longer, let's say, hide your statement of changes in comprehensive income in the statement of equity, which is what most people, I say hide, but you can no longer present your statement of changes in stockholders' equity or comprehensive income in the statement of changes in stockholders' equity. We did this because it links to the decisions made in financial instruments, and because there are a number of board members that steadfastly believe that it's important that when press releases go out, that the press release include the changes in comprehensive income. So that was one of the primary driving factors. But it doesn't change anything in terms of the format. It doesn't change anything into the format of that statement. Revenue recognition, we've been working on this for a number of years. We finally, in the last couple of years, have gotten some solid direction, and we've issued a proposed document that will establish a common principle for all industries, and it's really based upon a transfer of control of benefits and satisfaction of what your obligations are to customers. I think some of the highlights in terms of changes is that credit risk is initially factored into the measurement of the revenue. Additionally, what's not on this slide is that contingent consideration or variable revenue is included in your consideration of revenue, and it's using some type of an expected value, a probability-based notion of what revenue is. Leases got onto the agenda primarily because of the A, the rules-based nature of our standards to begin with, and B, the SEC's report on off-balance sheet financing. We've been working on it. We've pretty much come up with a converged solution. Lessees will record a right of use asset that record an obligation associated with that for all leases. Lessors was a sticking point because there was one camp that felt that you should use a performance obligation approach, so you should record a liability for your obligation to allow somebody to use the leased asset over time. There are other people that thought you should de-recognize it. What we've done is we've married both views and said that they're both pertinent. You know, some people should put a performance obligation on those people that are renting, let's say, those people that are turning over assets and renting to multiple users, similar to operating leases today. Those people that are leasing something for long periods of time where most of the risks and rewards of ownership have transferred to the lessee, they get a partial derecognition approach for those assets. That will be a challenge to the auditing profession. Those decisions were made after I developed these slides. So, consolidations is a classic example of what happens when standard setters leapfrog one another. Okay, we issued a standard to address some of the concerns over 46R, et cetera. The IASB then, which was standard number 167, the IASB then took a look at consolidations as a whole to address both variable interest entities as well as voting interest entities, and they came up with an exposure draft on that. We, in turn, deliberated with them when they were in the process of re-deliberating the comments that they received, and, in fact, we probably came to a stalemate in terms of differences of views among our board members as well as theirs. And what we've decided to do is, let's say, hold back. We're going to issue their exposure draft or final document on consolidations. We're going to issue their exposure draft.
We're going to hold a roundtable.
Yeah, but we're going to make available their exposure draft and hold a roundtable to see whether people believe that we should change the model for voting interest entities. Okay, and the model, right now we have a 50.1% consolidation model. They have a, if you have the ability control model. Now, they have that in words in their standards, but yet people believe that internationally, from a practical standpoint, people look to our standard in terms of how they implement their standard. So we want to get views of people as to whether we should be changing our consolidation model as it pertains to voting interest entities. And we'll do that, I believe, in the fall. There are a number of other projects on our agenda that I haven't addressed here, not the least of which is insurance. Insurance, I can tell you, is a major project for them because they don't have a standard on insurance. We do. And our board members, I think as a whole right now, are not in sync with some of the decisions the IASB has made. So therefore, they're proceeding to draft an exposure draft. We have not decided what we're going to do yet. And I expect that in the next few weeks we will be deciding. Okay. Issues for auditors. I think generally I've tried to summarize some of the major issues in terms of principles versus rules-based, you know, revenue recognition. We're going to be eliminating over 200 pieces of literature out there, so I think there are some fundamental principles that, you know, you all will need to apply, and that's going to put some challenge to you. It's going to create some challenge to you. We have a number of documents where we've now indicated what the disclosure objectives are. And in the document, we say, look, here are the specific disclosures we think will accomplish these disclosure objectives. But by the way, if complying with those specific requirements don't accomplish the objectives, then you need to disclose something else. That, again, is going to put some create some challenge to you all. Consolidations, if we adopted where the IASB is, that would do away with the 50.1% evaluation of consolidation, and that's going to create some significant challenges to you. Lessor accounting, while we have a derecognition and a performance obligation approach, they're very different, and it's going to be judgmental as to how to evaluate whether somebody has retained significant risks and rewards associated with the leased asset or not. You know, right now, we have the 90% test and the 75% test in terms of doing that evaluation because, you know, current GAAP in my mind is trying to achieve the objective of what we've decided relative to this project, but we're taking away that 90 and 75% test because you all want principle-based standards. Well, now you got them. Let's see what you can do with them. Financial instruments, you know, how you account for something, whether you account for it as something held for cash flows, it's based upon your business model. There's no tainting involved in the standard, so that's going to be a challenge. The expanded use of fair value, I don't need to say anything about that. Core deposits and how to value those, that's going to be a challenge. The amortized cost exception, I didn't mention this, but if you have hold more than 50% of your assets in financial type instruments, then you need to account for your liabilities at fair value. If you have less of your assets at that are financial instruments or accounted for at fair value, we allow you to elect an amortized cost exception in order to not create a mismatch, if you will, in your measurement attributes. You know, that's going to be a challenge. There's no probable threshold for impairment anymore. That's going to be a challenge. Cash collections in excess of interest accrual, what the proposed standard requires is you book those cash collections as an increase in your allowance, but then it says reconsider whether your allowance is enough, too much, or what have you. And assessing reasonably effective under hedge effectiveness is going to be a challenge. Fair value, we're going to have sensitivity disclosures, and in those sensitivity disclosures, you need to consider the interrelationship of different variables. So that is going to be something that is not easily done. The netting of financial instruments based upon portfolio management of risk, that also is going to require a lot of judgment. RevRec, when to combine, set, and separate contracts, determining what the transaction price is. The allocation of the transaction price to performance obligations shouldn't be that difficult. I think you're doing it already. At least you were supposed to under 081, so you should have some experience with that. Assessing the satisfaction of performance obligations will be a challenge, as well as assessing contingent consideration. Leases, in our proposed lease model, you have options to renew or cancel, but yet you need to consider the likelihood of whether those options will be elected in measuring your lease receivable and your obligation. So those will be judgmental areas. Contingent rents will be a challenge, although in the lease document there is a particular reliability threshold that you need to exceed before you consider contingent rents in your measurement of your leased assets and liabilities. Separating payments for services from lease payments is a major issue that is going to be a challenge. Consolidation, I think I already addressed. Insurance, I didn't even bother to list the challenges in insurance. You know, insurance accounting, at least what the ISB is proposing, is like I characterize it as let's account for the future today. Okay, that's what it is. And in terms of your revenue stream as well as your liability stream, And I said at a public meeting I would never audit an insurance company, you know, and if you do audit insurance companies, I hope you have a lot of insurance. financial statement presentation, the indirect direct cash flow method, will raise certain challenges to people. So I'm sure there are a number of other issues I didn't even think of, but with that, I'll stop and pass it on to my next expert.
Thank you, Larry. I think that's a really good foundation for Mike and I to provide some observations on how the process and later the implementation will affect both preparers and auditors. I do think this is a very timely topic. And, you know, before I start, I'd like to just applaud the positive steps taken by the FASB and the IASB to really prioritize and time phase the exposure documents now being released for comment. You know, and considering the actions already taken by the boards, we are still concerned, though, that the volume of major new standards, and you heard this from some of Larry's remarks, you know, is really unprecedented and continues to pose significant risks for companies and their auditors that should be carefully evaluated and proactively addressed, not just by the FASB and the IASB, but really by the regulators, both the PCAOB, the SEC, and others. You know, a lot of the changes that we're talking about here, and Larry talked about this, are really fundamental, and they affect many, if not all, industries out there. The volume's significant, and we worry that that may have an effect on the quality of the FASB and the IASB technical activities, the ability of preparers to adopt, and the ability of auditors to audit the required changes. And I take a step back, and, you know, we've always had a history at GE of being very, very active in evaluating standards that are proposed, that are new, and it's largely because we are diverse and we are big, and I have a fundamental belief, as do I think the company, that a preparer's ability to adopt is often highly correlated with their involvement in and their understanding of a standard as it's developed, and I think the same can be said of auditors. It's just really helpful to understand the conceptual framework and the basis for the board's decisions as you then apply it in practice. And so with respect to the proposals and the process going on, I guess I have four different observations. First, you know, the current volume is historically significant, and given that, I think it's really critical that the process continue to be thoughtful, involve appropriate comment and outreach periods, and that careful vetting takes place, and that we watch the signs to know when we ought to slow down further. Second, the proposals collectively represent, you know, very significant and fundamental changes in GAAP. They incorporate major shifts in RevRec, significantly increased use of fair value for financial instruments, and a new conceptual framework for leasing. I mean, Larry talked about all this, but those three in and of themselves are very, very big, not to mention, you know, the five or six other proposals that will be coming later this year and into next. You know, third, the transition periods really need to be thoughtfully and flexibly set. I know the FASB is intending to release an exposure draft later this year to solicit comment on transition periods, but I just can't stress enough that, you know, in order to allow companies to deploy implementation resources in the most appropriate and effective way, that drives a controlled process, which then allows the auditors to have, you know, a thoughtful audit process. And lastly, I think the regulatory environment is going to need to facilitate an orderly implementation and be prepared to deal with diversity in practice and emerging views on application and standards as they become embedded in practice. And I'll just take a couple of minutes and talk about each of these in a little bit more detail. You know, first, the standard setting process. You know, I've talked about, you know, the magnitude and volume of the changes under consideration, and it's really important that the board receives high-quality comment letters, that they continue the outreach efforts and public dialogue, and that their staff has time as they go through the process to just really thoughtfully consider not only, you know, how the standard's being written, but how it works across and you know, how it really compares and contrasts. And it's challenging under normal conditions, you know, let alone, you know, the volume that you're dealing with right now. And, you know, the current compression of time for all the steps to occur is very concerning. And it compounds as we move through the process. I mean, constituents have less time to read and understand. That could adversely affect the quality and quantity of the information obtained by the board. You know, providing appropriate comments and identifying inconsistencies is going to consume significant resources at the accounting firms as well. And the comment periods, I think, are going to be really critical. especially given the overlapping nature of them. You know, many preparers are only able to spend time deeply studying those standards that directly affect them. And in many cases, it means they're unable to evaluate the consistent application of the requirements and concepts across the standards. And it raises the possibility that important questions about consistency or scope will be overlooked. You know, and as we at GE have begun analyzing the exposure drafts, it really has become of increasing concern to me. I mean, we've had to divide and conquer to ensure that we can really deeply evaluate each of the standards. And as we go through this process, it's becoming more and more concerning that, you know, I really want our teams to go across and really compare notes about how the projects intersect. And I worry about our time to really do that in a quality way, in a way that'll give the board thoughtful, not only questions, but maybe some potential thoughts on solutions as well. But I also would imagine the board faces a similar dilemma, you know, as the volume of concurrent projects may fragment and dilute your time, or maybe your staff's time, you know, making it more and more difficult to ensure that the principles are internally consistent amongst the projects. There are just a number of significant linkages, and Larry talked about a bunch of these, but, you know, should lease assets and performance obligation liabilities, you know, do those get scoped into the financial instruments project? Are they required to be fair valued or not? You know, which principles apply there? You know, is the right to use intellectual property model in RevRec, you know, consistent with the right to use tangible property model in the leasing project? You know, there's a number of examples like this, and I could rattle off several more that just are really critically important to resolve before we actually move to implementation. And the reason I bring it up isn't to talk so much about due process, but it's really to raise the question that, you know, when you have these kinds of inconsistencies and they're undiscovered or they're not resolved in the due process time frame, it inevitably creates potentially significant interpretive issues and diversity in practice. And, you know, we've had many standards today that have had to be revised to address interpretive and operational issues that have emerged. You know, you've got FAS 96 and 109, you've got 140, 166, which, you know, was generated from 125. You could talk about FIN 46R and some others. But as you look at how we've had to evolve these over a number of years, there have been really important issues where companies have taken, you know, thoughtful and reasoned approaches and trying to do the right thing, but have ended up on two different sides of the coin in terms of how they've implemented. You know, and given that volume, I think it's going to be important for folks like the PCAOB and others to really think about what they need to be doing now to anticipate that and how they need to be involved in the FASB process to ensure that, you know, the FASB has the right feedback to determine when it just needs to slow down or take a different approach. You know, in addition to the interpretive, there's a whole host of significant operationally demanding requirements. You know, Larry talked about those, and I think the most important thing to talk about here is, do we have enough time, and, you know, how will we think about the nature of new standards, and just how will we, as a group, have the right collective approach to the accounting issues and questions. You know, these standards, as Larry mentioned, set forth broad principles, and they don't have a lot of bright lines. And they don't have, you know, significant detailed interpretive guidance. And they cover areas where we have historically had that, like RevRec and leasing. And while I think most folks fully support principles-based standard, I think the question is how concerned should we be about our collective ability to kind of shift into a mode of accepting good faith, reasonable judgments that are going to be necessary, and the judgments are going to differ across industries, companies, and potentially even audit firms. And, you know, the question is, are preparers ready to assume the responsibility for the judgments? Are the auditors ready to document and accept reasonable judgments and audit them? And are regulators willing to accept those as well? And I think there's also, and Larry alluded to this, you know, kind of natural inherent biases that carry over from existing GAAP in terms of how to apply the rules. You know, Larry talked about the historical aversion to recognizing contingent revenue. Well, that's fundamentally different in the RevRec exposure draft that's coming out. And, you know, I think that over time, that will be those types of issues will create some potentially difficult issues to resolve in practice. And Larry talked about a number of those. Operational challenges are also going to challenge closing cycles, and I think as closing cycles are challenged for companies due to things like estimating fair value for financial instruments, recording loan interest income at the effective rate under the new guidance versus at the contractual level, really looking at operating leases, I think all those things that compress a closing cycle compress the amount of time that auditors have to audit the actual underlying financial statements and to really challenge the process. You know, the transition time frame is just concerning. I think the exposure draft later this year is going to be really critical to help solicit views on that. I worry about whether we go for a big bang, whether we go for a very staged implementation, whether we allow companies to determine their own adoption paths. I know there's a natural leaning towards going for more of a big bang approach or a very set staged adoption path, but I can tell you that as you apply these standards across companies, they affect people in different ways. You know, we have a commercial leasing and lending business that if we said, you know what, let's apply financial instruments and leasing in the same time frame, you know, those changes are just very significant. They involve the same sets of technical resources at companies. They involve the same data sets that both our risk personnel and our accounting personnel use. And it's very, very difficult when you're managing a lot of change to do it all at once, right, and to do it in a controlled and thoughtful way. So I think, you know, auditors, the PCAOB preparers and others will need to be very, very thoughtful as to how they advise you and the board in terms of how to set that process. You know, Larry, you talked about it a little bit, but, you know, I think auditors, the need for a judgment framework is going to be really critical. You know, understanding how to adequately document the judgments that were made, I think that need is going to be even more pronounced. You know, as we adopt standards requiring more granular disclosures, you know, it seems to me the issue of materiality and audit scope may become more important. You know, how much auditing is really needed to determine that the financial statements taken as a whole are fairly presented, given the volume of detail that, you know, continues to be included in the footnotes. You know, I think we've added a lot of detail in the last couple of years, but these new proposals add quite a bit more, and I think that question will need to come front and center and really need to be resolved. So just taking a step back and closing, the potential changes proposed are really significant. I think drafting and finalizing so many standards with fundamental changes in a compressed time period may increase risk. The FASB, SEC, PCAOB, and others should collectively and proactively evaluate the risks that this will create. And we need to ensure we have the appropriate time to implement quality standards. We know the criteria and the mechanisms to slow down the process if we need to. We need to form working groups to interpret consistently and timely and develop an auditor judgment framework to enable decisions about acceptable alternatives and what may be a fluid implementation and post-implementation environment.